some of you may have actually read her book, Why Are All the Black Children Sitting Together in the Cafeteria? And so she talks about racism with this moving walkway metaphor. And I'll actually just read a quote from her because it's been really helpful for me in thinking about passive versus active anti-racism. So she says, "I sometimes visualize the ongoing cycle of racism as a moving walkway at the airport. Active racist behavior is equivalent to walking fast on the conveyor belt. Passive racist behavior is equivalent to standing still on the walkway. No overt effort is being made, but the conveyor belt moves the bystanders along to the same direction as those who are actively walking. Unless they are walking actively in the opposite direction at a speed faster than the conveyor belt, unless they're actively anti-racist, they'll find themselves carried along with others." So I'll be coming back to this metaphor throughout my talk. And I want to think a little bit about how has my journey in a lot of ways been passive and what are the things that could have happened to make it a little bit more active along the way. And hopefully in the discussion, we can think a little bit together about your journeys as individuals with race and maybe Prairie's journey as a community. So of course I had to put in a picture of me at Prairie as a kid. So this is me with the Prairie community at Bethel Horizons, maybe around 2000 or something like that. And I can't tell you exactly what I was thinking at the time. Maybe, you know, appreciating the wonderful music, maybe thinking about the turf that I'm sitting on. But I can tell you, I probably wasn't thinking about race and I probably wasn't thinking about racism. So why is that? Why was I able to go through most of my childhood without thinking about race very much? And the way I want to think about this is thinking about my race landscape. So by that, I mean, what's the racial surroundings? Who are the people around me? And also, what are the messages I'm receiving about race? So my community and my surroundings, I had a predominantly white family. Definitely my nuclear family was white. I lived in Monroe, Wisconsin, which is like 30 miles south of Madison, also predominantly white. All my friends were white, and my church, as you know, was also predominantly white. So what was school like? Also in school, a lot of my education was from white sources. So that means my teachers were white, but also I can't tell you who wrote the textbooks, but I can tell you that I didn't learn a lot of Black history. I didn't learn history from an Indigenous perspective. So a lot of the things that I was learning were from a white lens in school. What about the media I was consuming? I would say it was pretty anti-Black. So by that, I mean, there are a lot of anti-Black stereotypes that I was consuming, you know, associating Black people with, you know, specific, like with drugs, for example, or with danger. I think those kind of messages I was receiving a lot through the media and didn't have a lot of positive stereotypes of Black people. And then, so these are all kind of implicit messages I was receiving or what are my surroundings, but I also want to think about the explicit messages I was getting about race. And I would say a lot of them were put in this colorblind category. So things like, you know, color doesn't matter, race doesn't matter, or thinking about races in the past. And I definitely didn't learn anything about whiteness or what it meant to be white. So I want to pause for a minute and just ask you to think and reflect about how do you feel right now in this moment as I'm talking to you about my racial landscape growing up? And I'd encourage you, if you can, to think about what it feels like in your body. So is there any tenseness anywhere? Are you sweating? Do you feel disengaged, tired? Just take 30 seconds to reflect and then type it in the chat. Thanks everyone for contributing, and you can keep putting things in the chat as we go along. So people are saying, you know, uneasy, I'm feeling tight, I'm feeling tired, sad. And I wanna note too, some people are really intellectualizing it. So, you know, talking about the implications of it, but like, what does it really feel like in your body? And I think it's important, and it has been important for me to come back to that as I'm thinking about race, because a lot of times it ends up being really in my head and not in my body or in my emotional side. So thanks everybody for sharing. So I want to dig a little bit more into some of the explicit messages that I received about race, and I kind of alluded to them, but I want to sort of dig into what was really going on there. So One thing I've been thinking about is all the messages that I received about equality between people of different racial backgrounds, but without much context. So things like everyone's equal no matter their color. I heard many times growing up, both in Prairie and in sort of the general education, Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech, where he talks about dreaming about a day when his children won't be judged by the color of their skin, but the content of their character. And here at Prairie, we would talk a lot about the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And I still believe in that. And that's really important to me. But I think when we talk about these things, the subtle message can also be don't talk about race or don't talk about racial differences, because we're trying to promote the idea that everyone's equal. So we should kind of put race to the side. And that's confusing given the racial landscape that I talked about before. Receiving all this stereotypical anti-Black media and also living in a white neighborhood where I'm segregated. So I know that, you know, if everyone was equal, shouldn't, you know, everyone be living together? Why am I receiving all these stereotypical messages? So what's really missing is how do we make sense of the contradiction that we're saying everyone's equal, but when I look around me, I see that people are not living in equal circumstances. And so, you know, hint, it's ongoing structural racism, right? But without that context, it can be confusing. And if you're saying everyone's equal, but you don't see that, what message does that send? Another message I received was that racism is in the past. So again, in Prairie and also in my education, I think when people talked about race, they really focused on the civil rights movement and examples of overt racism. But I don't think there was much information on ongoing and current racism or current resistance movements to racism. And so what's missing from this discussion is how is racism happening now in the current moment and what are people doing about it right now? Because obviously the history of racial justice and racial justice movements is really key, but it can't be the only thing that we're talking about. So sometimes I heard the message that, you know, we shouldn't talk about race. Then when we did talk about race, it seemed like it was in the past. Sometimes we talked about it in the present, but when that was the case, often I think racism was discussed as a personal issue that people of color are dealing with. So maybe we discussed prejudice, but it was always in the context of how is it affecting this person of color on the individual level? And so I'll give an example. I think probably in high school, I did a project with Prairie RE where we interviewed people of color in the congregation. And we didn't ask this exact question, but it kind of boiled down to how do you feel when people stereotype you, right? And that also is an important question. We need to know that. We need to think about it. But the message was that racism is something one person does to another person. And that, you know, you should not stereotype people was basically the message. But I think what was missing there was, what are the stereotypes that I have? Let's dig into that. Let's figure it out. How do I actively counter the stereotypes that I have? How can we come in as a community and actively practice how to counter them? What have people done in the past to counter them? So kind of like really getting into it beyond just you shouldn't stereotype. Also, what was missing was a higher understanding of how racism shapes institutions. How does it shape society? So if we're just thinking about racism as something someone does to someone else, you're missing all these other components of how it works. And I would say the other thing that was missing from this was, how does it affect me as a white person? So how am I benefiting from these structures in our society that are oppressing certain groups and basically an understanding of white privilege? But also, how has white supremacy actually negatively impacted me too? How has that harmed me as a white person? So just to kind of sum up these messages, I was getting this message about equality without the context, and that the implicit message there is that race doesn't matter. We shouldn't be talking about race or thinking about race. I also received this message that racism is in the past. We're going to focus on how people fought racism in the civil rights movement. And that implicit message is that racism isn't relevant now in the current moment, and you don't need to be thinking about it right now as it's operating in the world. And then the message that racism's sort of something that people of color are dealing with on an individual level is telling me racism isn't relevant to me. It's not important for me to think about in a current moment. So getting back to this, this metaphor of the moving walkway, basically at this point, I would say these messages are kind of keeping me just standing on the walkway, not thinking about race, not trying to figure out what's going on, but just passively moving on the walkway. So I next continued on to college. I went to Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota, which is a liberal arts college, and it was predominantly white. So how did my journey with race continue there? So I would say I was able to learn a lot about the impacts of racism during my college experience. Some of it was formal. So I would, for instance, I took a course on African-American literature and film, and I was able to learn a lot about common racist tropes and sort of the history of segregation in the U.S., which I didn't learn in high school. I also had some informal discussions, you know, just hanging out with friends, white and non-white, and talking about race. And I think in that context, I learned a lot more about structural and interpersonal racism, and we would talk a lot about it. And so these discussions and these formal learning opportunities were really counter narratives to some of the implicit messages I'd received as a kid, because I was learning race does matter. It's really relevant, and it's impacting people now. So there were a lot of positive experiences in my race journey during college, but I would say overall, race and racism were not prioritized during my college education. So examples of this, coursework on race is not required for graduation. And I think, you know, that's still the case now. Discussion of race in science courses never really happened. And I think I'm only now starting to realize how important that is, because often it's sort of relegated to literature, to history classes, but race really permeates science. So you may know about the Tuskegee experiments. There's many other things that have happened along the way in science that have been extremely racist. And so we need to incorporate those things into any learning we do about science. And also thinking back, all of the classes that I took that did discuss race were taught by people of color. So thinking about how does that inform the implicit messages I'd received? I think it does sort of prop them up, right? So if you're not required to talk about race to be considered an educated person, you know, that's telling you race doesn't matter. That's telling you that racism is not relevant now. And if I'm not seeing any examples of white people who are committed to talking about race, then that's kind of implicitly telling me racism is not relevant to me if the only people that are talking about it are people of color. So sort of in conclusion, I was able to leave college without much knowledge about race or racism, and without having done a lot of self-reflection on my own race and my own role in racism. So getting back to the moving walkway, at this point, maybe I'm sort of slightly aware that something's moving. Maybe you know, I'm seeing some people coming by me in the other direction, but I don't really know what's going on. I don't know where we're going, and I'm not sure how this walkway works. So I want to take a moment to stop again for y'all to reflect a little bit. What did you learn about race in high school or in college education? And who were the people that taught you? So was it only people of color? Were you only taught within sort of like an ethnic studies department? So take another moment to reflect and type in the chat. Thanks everyone for sharing your story, and you can continue to type things out. I just want to highlight something Peggy said. History was through a white European lens, and race and diversity were always add-ons. So briefer than anything else, like Multicultural Literature Month, that's also definitely been my experience, that it's kind of a special thing that you talk about in a certain situation. People saying it's a story of absence. Yeah. And I think that's kind of disturbing as we, because this is an intergenerational service, right? And we're all saying, oh, it's kind of the same throughout the years. We've all kind of had a similar experience, or things haven't changed much, which is really upsetting. Yeah, so thanks for sharing. Some people did have the chance to learn from people of color, but I would imagine a lot of people had a similar experience as me, that not a lot of white professors were talking about race. So continuing on to the next step in my journey, I moved to DC to take a position in a lab. And I would say the white liberal conversations, I'll just call it white liberal as shorthand, that happened in college kind of continued. So some of that was good, some of it was bad. Good in that we're still discussing racism. We're still trying to figure out how it works. So though my circles were predominantly white, both in my science in my lab and also in my social circle, but we did have a lot of discussions about gentrification. This was something that was actively happening in DC while I lived there, and also health disparities, especially in science, this comes up a lot. So we were talking about these things, but I would say that despite those conversations, I still would say I was passively being carried along on the moving walkway. So I want to unpack that and figure out, why is it that despite talking about it, trying to think about it, trying to learn more about it, how was I still being passively carried along? So in these white liberal discussions, I think they were often missing a piece about internal racism. So we focused on external manifestations of racism, right? Things like, okay, how is the structure working? This institution is being racist. Things like, you know, I was there when Donald Trump was campaigning. So we would focus on things like, you know, what is the racist thing he just said? But I didn't really look inward and figure out, how am I racist? How am I still holding a lot of stereotypes and actively contributing to this system? I would say we also didn't make any commitment to action. So we talked a lot, but we didn't say collectively, hey, we're going to do something. There weren't a lot of people of color as part of the conversations. And I would say we generally kept things very intellectual. So there wasn't a lot of emotional component of the conversation, not a lot of spiritual component of the conversation. So how did those things impact the implicit messages that I talked about at the beginning? I would say in some ways they confirmed them. So the fact that we as a group of predominantly white people felt like we sort of had the full perspective or could like talk in a way about race without considering what are the perspectives we're missing because there aren't a lot of people of color here, and how does that, you know, blind us to potential pitfalls of our conversation? So in that way, we were kind of saying that race doesn't matter, right? Because as a group of white people, we can talk about this in an educated way and kind of come to all the conclusions that matter, right? We also kind of confirmed that racism isn't relevant now, because if it was important now in the current moment and ongoing, we probably would have made some sort of commitment to do something about it in the moment. And also by externalizing it and not thinking about it on a more emotional level, that confirms that we were thinking that racism is not really relevant to us. So despite talking about it, the way that we were talking about it kind of continued this passive carrying along with the white supremacist walkway, I guess I'll say. So I want to think a little bit about a turning point for me, which is when race really became more relevant for me. And that was when I moved here to UC Berkeley and I saw a number of instances of racial discrimination in grad school and just became more aware of racial discrimination in general. So I'll tell you one story about a time when I saw racial discrimination happening and my own privilege and how it played into that situation. So my first year of grad school in 2017, I was applying for a National Science Foundation fellowship, which is basically money you get from the government to fund your research. And so I asked some professors in the class I was taking if I could get an extension on a homework assignment that was due basically the same time as the fellowship was due. And I also sent them my fellowship and said, hey, could you give me some comments if you have time, some advice on my fellowship? And they said, sure, you can have the extension. Here's some comments that were super helpful. And so that was great. And I talked to one of my friends who's Puerto Rican in the same year as me, and she was also applying to the fellowship. And I said, oh, my professor just emailed me this morning, gave me this extension. You should ask for an extension too. She sent an email asking for extension. Same day, same fellowship, same class. And they denied her. They said, no, you can't have an extension. And they didn't give her any feedback on the fellowship. So as we tried to make sense of this, the only answer we could come up with was that, hey, this is racial discrimination. And that was really frustrating for me, really scary. And just put it in the context of, this is my own privilege at work here. I'm getting this advantage, both in terms of having more time to work on it and getting the feedback from knowledgeable professors that my my classmate didn't get. And I have this fellowship. I'm currently using it to fund my research, and she isn't. So this was kind of a wake-up call to me, and it's not the only one. As I've talked to a lot of friends and heard directly from professors, like, racist statements about my friends, this is really, yeah, for lack of a better word, I just woke up. So these stories showed me a whole world that I wasn't experiencing as a white person. So just even by being friends with people of color, hearing a lot about this whole other side of what it's like to navigate grad school or the scientific world in general as a person of color that there was no way I would know about as a white person, because I would just kind of skate above it, not knowing all of these things were going on for other people. So these stories were directly really revealing my privilege, also making me angry because these people were my friends and I didn't want them to be treated so unfairly. So it really made racism feel more relevant to me. So now on this walkway, I'm kind of noticing where we're going, and I'm like, hey, I don't want to be part of this. I don't want to go that way. So how do you move beyond that realization that this is a problem to figuring out your own internalized racism and making a commitment to do something about it? And two things that were really important for me, and again, this is just my journey, so this isn't what will be important for everyone. But I went to two intensive workshops that really helped move my thinking and move my like emotional awareness along in terms of my relationship to race. So one of them was a 3-day workshop with Robin DiAngelo, who studies whiteness and what it means to be white and how people respond to race as white people. And then I also went recently this summer to a 7-day professional development from Academics for Black Survival and Wellness, led by Dr. Della Mosley and Paris Bellamy, who are counseling psychologists and academics. And these workshops really gave me space and time and community that was targeted towards self-reflection. So lots of thinking about how I'm responding, what are the patterns that come up for me again and again when I talk about race, and how can we as a community fight those together? So this really helped me better understand my own racism and also make a commitment to Black liberation. And what I mean by that is basically fighting for a day where all Black people can, you know, be at their fullest, move about their lives without any oppression. So I really was able to commit to that by, taking the time and space to learn more and learn from these people who are experts in the field. So of course, there are a lot of stumbles along the way. It's not a linear path at all. And I just want to highlight one example of issues that I've had along the way, which is that a lot of times my initial responses to my friend's stories were actually pretty racist. So when people would tell me about discrimination they'd experienced, my first reaction was, and still is sometimes, surprise. And that really just comes from being naive. So like I was saying before, as a white person, I don't have these experiences of racial discrimination. So it's like, wait, did that really happen? Like, is that really how the system works? I don't know. So a lot of times I can be surprised. But this surprise and disbelief actually perpetuates racism, right? Because you're kind of silencing that person. You're saying, oh no, are you sure that's really what happened? You're invalidating their experience. And then by not believing them, you're not fighting to change those things. So one thing that's really helped me in combating this instinct to sort of be surprised and not believe people is actually my work in sexual violence and sexual harassment prevention. And for those of you that may be familiar with that field, it's really important when someone reveals to you that they've been harmed that you respond in a certain way. So you want to listen, you want to believe them, you don't want to blame the victim for what they've experienced, and you want to ask what they need and offer support. So I'm trying to apply that framework from sort of another set of racial and social justice movements and apply that to how I think about racism when someone tells me that they've been harmed I want to support them. I want to listen and believe them. And so I know we're coming up on time, but just want to tell you a little bit more about how I've gotten support as I've learned more about race and racism. And I think, again, community is super important in this journey. At least for me, it's been very important in supporting my growth. So I'm part of this grad student group called Inclusive MCB, which is my department. And we focus on increasing equity, especially for people who are normally underrepresented based on their race or ethnicity. So this group of people, this community, has been really great for me to push me to grow and holding me accountable. So if I cause harm, they'll call it out. They'll talk to me about it. We'll work through it. And I'll be committed to doing better because of this community that I'm in. And it also just makes me excited to do racial justice work when I'm with a group of other people that are really excited about it. And I'm also part of an accountability group of 5 white scientists that are working for racial justice. So we have weekly meetings where we are trying to read a lot of things, learn all the things that we didn't learn in high school and college, just practice talking about race because it's really hard for white people, and holding each other accountable that we said that we were committing to action and making sure that we follow up on that. So how could Prairie start to walk in the other direction? What would that look like? And of course, that's something that's going to take a lot of thinking and a lot of dedication. But here is how I like to think about my path, and maybe it can help. So of course, as a scientist, I have to put a graph somewhere in here. So let's think about time on the x-axis and sort of some nebulous measure of anti-racist effectiveness on the y. So maybe that's the number of things you're doing, the quality of the anti-racist efforts you're doing. So ideally, you're going to have this great linear trajectory. I mean, just getting better and better, more and more effective over time. Realistically, you might think, okay, well, that's, you're not always going to be doing great. Maybe you'll have some slow times, some times when things go well. Maybe it looks like this. But in my experience, my journey has looked a little more like this. So sometimes it seems like you're going backwards. Sometimes you're not being effective at all. You're causing harm. You're cycling back to things that you thought you figured out before, and oh, here I am again doing the same thing. So it's pretty a convoluted journey. There's a lot of different points of learning, a lot of times when it's not very clear cut. But it's important that, you know, you continue this work because silence also perpetuates racism. So Prairie will have to figure out, and each of you individually will have to figure out what your path is to become more anti-racist and to really commit to freeing people from oppression. But here's just one example. Some of you may have heard a few weeks ago, there were protests in Louisville, Kentucky, after the news came out about Breonna Taylor's killers not being charged for her murder. And in Louisville, this Unitarian Universalist church took in the protesters because it was past curfew. They provided food, they provided water, they gave them safe haven so that they could stay somewhere after curfew, after they were protesting. So I was really moved by this, and I think it's one example of what churches and what you use specifically can do in the current moment to help people that are fighting for racial justice. But there will obviously be internal work that Prairie has to do. There's going to be a lot of different things that individuals in Prairie can do. So I just want to leave you with a few thoughts about what it's like to chart, what it could be like to chart your journey. So I would say it's important to start with where you are now. So try to do some kind of self-assessment. What is our history with race and racism? What are all the resources that we have? And then thinking about what comes next, how will you be sure that whatever work you do is centering the needs of Black or other marginalized people, and how will you be accountable to them? And then how do you maintain urgency? And this is important because we know that Black people are dying, and every moment we don't do anything is really important. So one thing I'll say about my experience is that, and why I kind of asked you to think about how you feel in your body, is that often when thinking about race, I disconnect from my emotions and my bodily reactions. And so one thing that has helped me is music that can help me humanize the Black experience and recommit to anti-racism and Black liberation. So maybe people can tell me if we don't have time, but I do have a short video from Shade Diamond, who's a trans activist and singer-songwriter. And just want to give you the chance to hear from someone who has inspired me and see if you feel the same. And it's okay if you don't, but just finding ways to stay committed and stay inspired as you go, as you continue your journey with race. Oh, and I actually have to make sure that I'm sharing my computer sound. One second.
I don't like antiques, I want something new. The world don't like no freaks coming in their rooms. But this beggar's got a right to choose. I'm not a stranger, I'm just like you. I need love, I don't need money. After all these years, baby, I'm still running. Who's gonna say my want is not a need? I get looks that get so dirty. After all these years, baby, it's still hurting. Who's gonna say my want is not a need? Just want my piece of the American pie. Got your slice, where is mine? Put my fingers on this thing called life. Just a piece of the American pie. Break the chain of old beliefs. I'm the flame that you can't unsee. Like antiques, I want something new. I got my dignity, gonna live my truth. Like the southern smile, I just can't lose. Let my light sweep across the room. You may laugh, but it's not funny. That's the thing that keeps me coming. Who's gonna say my woe is not a need? Lets me know that they're still learning. Who's gonna say my want is not a need? Just want my piece of the American pie. You got your slice, where is mine? Lick my fingers on this thing called life. Just a piece of the American pie. Break the chain. I'm the flame that you can't unsee.
So yeah, I'd love to take any questions, comments, and discussion. And I guess before that, I just wanted to have a few acknowledgements just to the people that have helped me think a lot about this. So I guess just some friends from grad school, lots of organizers for the different workshops that I've attended in the current accountability group that I'm part of. So yeah, thank you so much. And I'd love to take questions and hear what you think.
Yeah, we just have time for a handful of questions. If you could raise your hand or click your raised hand. John.
So you talked about the fact that you didn't have any discussions of racism in your science classes. The thing that comes to mind in there is that race from a scientific standpoint, historically has been kind of filled with pseudoscience. I think of eugenics and the bell curve and, study of things that really separate humans when they shouldn't. And I'm just wondering, I wanted to hear your feedback on that. And maybe one thing that came to mind for me is maybe studying the root cause of racism, such as tribalism.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a great comment. And I think one of the things that I meant by that is that we really need to know that history. So when we're studying science, I'm realizing that, you know, some of the discoveries, some of the things that we are being taught and that we're using in our science are kind of have this racist history, and that they were really developed in order to separate people. So like genomics has been used to try to separate people by race, which that's basically been debunked that, you know, racial groups are not different genetically, and it's completely a social construct. But we don't talk about that in science and how important it is in our science communication to make sure that we're getting that point across. But you're right, I think there are places to talk about race in science. So like I study stress and how the environment impacts behavior. And so there's racial trauma that people of certain races have because of the social systems that they're placed in. And so that does affect your biology, right? So there are biological differences, but it's not inherent. It's because of the racism that people are experiencing, or, you know, differences in nutrition, differences in health outcomes because doctors don't listen to Black people and they don't believe that they're in pain, for example. So yeah, there's a lot of ways that race is important in science, but definitely making sure to debunk a lot of the old and still ongoing myths about race and science too. Yeah, thank you. Other comments or questions? Looks like Rachel.
So I just want to comment that it is hard to hear what you didn't get from Prairie. And of course, I can talk about what you didn't get from your parents, but that's a separate issue. That I remember being one of the co-teachers for our racial justice year, where we did this, you know, several months worth of doing a project to try to help better understand the impact of race. And of course, what you talked about, that we talked about it more about stereotypes and how you shouldn't stereotype. I mean, what you described, you gathered from it. It kind of like, oh, yes, oh, that is what we did. And I think one of the things that makes it difficult to move forward, or maybe in your case, move backward against the moving walkway, is that it's painful to realize what is undone by you personally and by your community. That's just hard to look straight in the face. Mm-hmm. So I just want to put that out there. It's one of the things that holds me back, is I don't want to acknowledge what I'm not doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And I think this is something that comes up a lot, thinking about race, is that there's a lot of white guilt. So when we think about, you know, all the things that white people have done and all the things that we're not doing, that can even get in the way of making progress, because it's again about you. So yeah, I feel that. I struggle with that too. And it's something that I think a lot of people struggle with. But we need to find a way to move past it, because it's important.
I'm afraid that we're over time already, but we can... we can continue this discussion right after our closing words and song. So please stay and continue, because I think there's a lot more to get to talk about. So thank you, Madeline. That was really great.
Thanks everybody for listening, and I look forward to more conversation.
Now we'll have closing words read by Robin.
The Struggle Continues by Israel Bafardi. The road that lies ahead of us is a long one, and the pace of progress will sometimes feel glacially slow. Never forget that glaciers, over time, can carve out grand canyons and great lakes. moving tectonic plates can raise up mountains over millennia, or they can explode awe-inspiring volcanoes in milliseconds. Our commitment to love and justice can do the same.
And now we'll have a closing song. Amber will play number 131, Love Will Guide Us. And the words are in the order of service.
Hey guys, I'd like to do a sound check because I switched to a different instrument. Can everybody hear that? Can I get some? We're good? Okay. So I'm going to play through the hymn first, all the way through, just so you can hear it, and then we'll start singing.
It's time for our virtual coffee hour, and I'd like to start by welcoming guests and visitors. If anyone would like to raise your hand, and we can greet you and find out something about you. After this, we'll take time to briefly share joys and concerns. So please raise your hand. You have something that you'd like to share.